It must be football season in Texas. This is Game Day with Jeff Ward on News Radio 1080 KRLD. Every Friday night, get an insider's look at college football with a Texas twist. From big matchups and exclusive interviews to expert analysis and accurate odds. Everything a Texas football fan needs. Game Day with Jeff Ward right now on News Radio 1080 KRLD. Powered by Uber Eats.
Welcome to Game Day. I'm Jeff Ward, and wherever you are in Texas, thanks for listening. This is a show about the storylines of the games, players, coaches, and programs you care most about in the best football state in the country. All right, here's what's ahead. I'll give you my Game Day rankings 1 through 5. We'll talk about the biggest game for the SEC. I think the most impactful game in the entire country that also has not just playoff implications, but I think the inside rail to the SEC championship. We've got to talk about A&M and LSU. I'll break down the teams, the coaches, and players most under pressure. Welcome back, Joey McGuire and Sonny Dykes. And we'll finish up with some predictions. All right, everyone, we got regular season chaos. We have a full-on dumpster fire that nobody could see coming. Some of it's good, some of it's fun, some of it's really, really bad. Now we have to all start thinking about in terms of the 12-team college football playoff. And there's a couple of ways to look at that, right? You're even going to hear the term bubble teams more often. So let's take a look at the best way to look at the 12-team playoff going forward. There are teams that are trying to position themselves to get into the 12-team tournament. Then you've got teams, a few teams, that are looking to play for conference championships. So the teams that are alive in the conference championship conversation still, one loss doesn't knock you out anymore. Two does. But the teams, the programs that are still very much in the conversation about playing for a conference championship include Texas, who was rolled by Georgia in Austin, but they're still very much alive. It's all in front of them. SMU is very much alive in the ACC and can still chase a conference championship game. And of course, A&M, because the A&M-LSU winner, I think, has inside position, assuming they take care of business, on playing for an SEC championship. That's the good part. That's the interesting part about playing for championships. The bad story is the meltdown of TCU and Texas Tech, two teams that we thought would challenge in the Big 12. Heck, 5 days ago, we thought Texas Tech would, or a week ago, we thought Texas Tech would challenge for a Big 12 championship. We're in a great place. Now the race is entirely different. They're both out of the championship hunt, and we're not even to Halloween. Didn't see that one coming. There are losses as we start to think about this. I mean, one loss isn't at all what we used to think of in terms of a 4-team playoff. Now, at a 12-team playoff, it's different. So there are losses that are best described as, that's a bummer, but little has changed. There are those losses. Then there are those that are damaging, that puts a team up against a wall, and you have to win out those losses. There's sort of two categories now. So let's start with Texas Tech. What happened? Well, everything was great, and Tech somehow, some way, was blasted by Baylor 59-35 in Lubbock. You can put it in all caps. That couldn't happen. That's the thing that couldn't happen. That's the thing we didn't see happening. All the bragging about Texas Tech, and look what happened there. 4 wins in a row, and then a loss at home to Baylor. Is Tech out of the race in the Big 12? The answer is mathematically no, but they would need so much help. It's hard to see a scenario at a 2-loss Tech could find their way into the Big 12 championship, given the fact that the two teams at the top of the standings, Iowa State and BYU, are undefeated. That's a crushing loss. So there are two teams now, Iowa State, BYU undefeated. 4 teams in the league have 1 conference loss. Tech is alive, yes, but barely. That means their game Saturday is a knockout game. Tech and TCU play in Fort Worth on Saturday, and the loser is completely out if it's Tech. What to make of TCU? I don't know. Who knows? It's a team that's been blown out in Fort Worth against SMU. They gave up 66 points to SMU. They lost to Houston, which is one of the worst teams in the Big 12. And then they turn around when we write them off and they win, have a good win against Utah in Salt Lake City. So they sit at 4-3. They're 2-2 in the Big 12. For TCU, it's been a disappointing season from the very beginning. You could say, hey, wait a minute, maybe they catch fire after beating Utah, then beating Texas Tech. Maybe so, but probably out of the race. They just need to fix everything that's wrong. Now, then there are teams that aren't playing just for a tournament berth. These are teams still alive for conference championships. So we start with Texas. Yep, they got their face kicked in by Georgia in Austin, 30-15. They were 5-point favorites, but that's one of those, well, that's a bummer, but little has changed losses. They had one to give away. Georgia probably did not. Everybody in the SEC, which is complete chaos now, everybody in the SEC now has one loss. The big picture for Texas of that beatdown in Austin really didn't hurt all that much. It's ego, and it might be confidence, but in terms of standings, it didn't do a whole lot of damage to Texas at this point. Texas coach Steve Sarkisian said this about his dramatic quarterback move of pulling starter Quinn Ewers.
Yeah, my feeling was in the game was I felt Quinn was a little uneasy, and you know, I just felt like giving him a chance to kind of step back, regroup, and I didn't know if we'd get a series or two with Arch, depending on how much time was on the remaining in the half on the clock. So we just told Quinn, we said, hey, we're going to go with Arch here, give you a chance to get into the locker room, let's regroup, and then come back out in the second half. And so that's what we did, and I felt like it was effective. I thought Quinn came out and played a much better second half and played well in the third quarter. You know, Quinn's our starting quarterback. You know, I appreciate the fact that we're fortunate enough to have a backup like Arch that can come into the game and, you know, provide a spark in some sense. But at the end of the day, you know, Quinn's our starter. And like I said, but, you know, I think we've got to do a better job around him. I think he would tell you he can play better, but we've got to coach better. Everybody's got to be better for our offensive football team to perform better.
They will be a tournament team almost no matter what, and they're still in the hunt for the SEC championship. So little has changed for Texas. Then there's SMU, and might be the coolest story going now. They just keep blowing people out. Put anybody in front of them, and they blow them out. They're number 22 in the country now. They've scored 66, 42, 34, 40 in the last four straight wins. They played Duke on the road this weekend. This is just a cool team with a cool story. SMU is like Texas. They're still very much in the hunt for a conference championship and, I still think, and a spot in the tournament. They may very well play their way into the tournament by blowing so many people out, but they're not done in the ACC yet. Then the Aggies. The biggest game of the SEC is also the most important game in the country this weekend. With a win, A&M is in the hunt for a conference championship. A loss, then they likely have to run the table to get into the tournament with two losses. That would mean, Aggie fans know this now, with a loss to, say, LSU this weekend, they would then have to run the table. That would include beating Texas to get into the tournament, I think. It's a stretch to say a three-loss A&M team could get into the tournament. So, yep, they could lose at Kyle Field to LSU, but I don't think could lose again. And everything I just said about A&M applies to LSU as well. They're in the exact same situation. Two really good teams with two quarterbacks that are playing really well now. Two coaches that are in the running for coach of the year. And I think with a win, I do. I think Mike Elko would be the front runner for SEC coach of the year with a win. You can make maybe the same argument with Brian Kelly at LSU, but winner of this game has the inside track on the SEC in a great spot.
This is about survival each week in the SEC on the road and looking to find consistency in performance. And, you know, we're starting to get that from our team. You know, we're playing much better defensively. And that was, you know, certainly what we needed to do in this program was to upgrade our defense. We were playing very well on the offensive side of the ball, but, you know, getting the defense to play to a standard, and that's what we're getting. We're getting some individual performances that are outstanding, but as a unit, when you go on the road, pack a defense, as they say, right? And that's the best way to feel better about your team.
Looking ahead to LSU, you know, it's going to be a huge challenge. It's going to be a great environment. You know, it's going to be an opportunity for us to go out there and show we belong on this stage and have taken this program where we all thought we wanted it to go. It's a great, great opportunity. It's a great venue. They're a great team. We're a talented team. It's going to be a lot of fun. And so looking forward to Saturday, looking forward to a great environment. And Kyle, I know our people will show out and it'll be electric and, you know, spend the week doing the best we can to go play our best football.
Now, the Game Day Power Index, powered by Kia of Fresco.
All right, so let's talk about the top five this week. Yeah, it's a mess. At number five, almost by default, at number five, they're 4-3, but coming off a good win at Utah. That's how they made their way to five. I put TCU at five. They get Texas Tech this weekend. One of those two teams, the loser of that game, disappears from our top five, I promise. You can't lose again, and they'd be back in. Put TCU at five. Number four is Texas Tech. I know, but Jeff, they just lost to Baylor at home. Yeah, I know. We're running out of qualified teams all of a sudden. That's what I've noticed. They gave up 59 points to Baylor. They have to win to stay alive. I'm giving them some credit for the four wins before, but a loss to TCU in Fort Worth, and we're going to have to define what is in trouble, but Joey McGuire's in trouble. That'd be back-to-back losses that just couldn't happen. So I'll put them at four because there's a good football team in there somewhere that comes out every now and then. It may come out on Saturday in Fort Worth. At three, and some could argue they should be at two, but these top three are all really, really good. And that is SMU. They just keep blowing people out. They're that good. SMU plays at Duke. They've got to run the table, though. No question. Doesn't matter if they're 1 or 2 point wins. They've got to run the table. They started Duke this weekend. I feel perfectly comfortable with SMU at three, maybe even two. At two, I'm going to put Texas at two. They had a double-digit home loss to Georgia. That it was 30-15. The score, it felt like a lot more than that. I don't think that score is indicative of how badly Georgia pushed Texas around. They ended up pulling their quarterback, which was an interesting storyline all by itself. Quinn Ewers was pulled at one point late in the second quarter, put back in and, you know, managed a little something in the third quarter, but Georgia was just too much. Georgia was just too good. They overwhelmed the Texas offensive line. Texas plays at Vanderbilt, and no one's laughing anymore. Texas is an 18-point favorite. It should be mentioned, and I'll bet Steve Sarkisian mentions this a few times. Alabama was a 22-point favorite a few weeks ago at Vanderbilt, and they ended up throwing the goalposts in the river. And number one, I'm good with this, Texas A&M, a deserving A&M team. They host LSU. Six straight wins LSU has after a loss to USC to start the season. This is an SEC championship elimination game. That's what it is. It eliminates you from the SEC championship game. It doesn't eliminate you yet from the college football playoff. It's huge. It is a cool matchup. Everything about it is close. Even the quarterbacks who are playing at a high level. So there you go. They deserve to be number one. If they beat LSU, they are certainly number one easily. All right, let's talk about what happens now and the immediate future for the winner and the loser of A&M LSU. It's game day. I'm Jeff Ward.
Game Day with Jeff Ward on News Radio 1080 KRLD, powered by Uber Eats. Listening to Game Day with Jeff Ward, powered by Uber Eats, breaking down Texas college football right here on News Radio 1080 KRLD.
I'm Jeff Ward, and this is Game Day, so let's talk about the biggest matchup of the weekend. I think most impactful matchup of the weekend. That's A&M and LSU, two red-hot teams in a game that most likely keeps the winner on pace for playing for an SEC championship. And the loser of this game probably has to win out to get into the 12-team college football playoff.
Now, so they say, powered by the Low T Center, reinventing men's healthcare.
Longtime voice of the Aggies, he's Andrew Monaco. All right, Andrew, outside of Oregon and a few undefeated teams scattered here and there, these are probably the two hottest teams in the sport right now.
And very similar, aren't they, Jeff?
Yep.
They both lost that first game, right? Heralded matchups, LSU to USC in Vegas, A&M to Notre Dame. They got right against, for A&M, I thought the road win in Florida, and then the ranked win against Missouri. And for LSU, I think their win at South Carolina and then the overtime win over Ole Miss were two very impactful games. And they are playing really well, as evidenced by LSU really controlling Arkansas last week. Aggies get the win after the bye. I think for this A&M team, you can see them trending up and improving each week. Are they a finished product? No. And here's what changes now for A&M, I think, after the bye. The expectations change.
Yeah.
I don't know whatever people thought about Mike Elko's first season. You had whatever, but it changes. And that's what happens with teams. And with expectations comes a little bit of a target on your back. But these two teams, very familiar. Normally they play around Thanksgiving. We're just going to do it a month earlier. And LSU in the top 10 and A&M just outside that top 10.
You know, about Mike Elko, and you're exactly right. They are, both of these teams now, certainly A&M, is the sexy topic of conversation now. They've gone from, a couple weeks there, the stories were out, they're a bubble team. Even some of that said about LSU as well. But now all of a sudden, as I just, you know, led into this, these are teams that are now looking at the inside position on playing. The winner plays for the SEC championship, and the loser, they can possibly win out. They're in the tournament too. What's for Mike Elko, what's been the secret sauce?
We knew that defense. And before the season at camp, I was watching that defense. I said, "Ooh, they're going to be salty." Well, they're salty, all right. And I think that when you watch them and you see the way they play, and how that defense and that defensive line really gets everything going. And that, to me, has always been a secret for Mike as a defensive coordinator and here as the head coach at Texas A&M. A defense controls things. And, Jeff, you know, in this day and age of 2024, you better have a defense. You can't always win a shootout. And that defense has kept this team in it. I think the other thing is this team has learned. Mike's big line with this team is, look, when you go out, when you run out of the tunnel, you got to empty the clip on every play. Every play. And there were some times where there wasn't that focus. Missouri kind of gave them that focus. Oh, that's how good we can be when we do this. I think they were able to answer that. I think when you look at the way they play, and to the LSU side, look, Garrett Nussmeier has bided his time. He's always filled in when LSU has wanted him. And then in the bowl game last year, he takes over when Jaden Daniels doesn't play. And I think that confidence at quarterback, Jeff, he could have left at any time in the last 2 years, but he didn't. And I give him a ton of credit for that. And so did Mike Elko. But you've got Kyren Lacy, who can flat out hurt you. Not deep like the LSU receivers in the past, but he can turn that 8-yard gain, turn and burn, and really become an explosive play. And they have a tight end in Mason Taylor. The last tight end the Aggies played like that, Bowling Green, he did pretty well against A&M. So they're going to have to know that. I just think you look at the way they play, the style they play, they're built two offensive lines, two defensive lines that are built for SEC success.
Yeah, talk about both quarterbacks, because these two guys have been through it, man. And I've said all year, A&M goes as Connor Wiegman goes, and you could say the exact same thing about LSU, but these guys, both of them now, have become a story themselves. They've been that good.
Yeah, I agree. And as I mentioned earlier about Nussmeier, I think he's in complete control of this offense, and that's huge when you're comfortable. I know he hadn't played the last couple of years, except a handful of games, like I said, when he filled in, but I think there's a comfort there. And that's with a couple of different offensive coordinators. But I think that comfort there and having those targets, I think, also helps. Dependable targets. Connor, we're seeing getting more comfortable as well. That shoulder being much better than it was. Outstanding against Missouri, against a Missouri defense that played into Connor's hands and that he can throw to open windows and has that confidence. I'm interested to see how much work he does this week after a couple of picks last week against Mississippi State. But you can see the comfort. I think you can also see, I think it's a little understated, the Aggies have some wideouts as well. I don't know if they compare individually, but I think he's got the trust with the Noah Thomases, Jabri Barber with the big game, Jade Walker, Cyrus Allen. These guys have had some reps, not just with Connor, but Barber at Troy, Allen at Louisiana Tech. And I think as they get more and more comfortable with one another, that's when you see Connor Wiegman get more and more comfortable. And let's say this about both quarterbacks. Garrett Nussmeier has been sacked 2 times. Connor's been sacked 4 times, 7 overall. These offensive lines are giving their quarterbacks time to go through progressions, and they're giving their teams running opportunities. Le'Veon Moss has been huge for A&M. It says something when you've got a freshman running back at LSU. To be a freshman running back to go from high school to college is impressive enough to be able to run the way he does. Caden Murphy for LSU in the SEC. You're the bellwether back, says an awful lot as well.
Punkin' Dude, the voice of the Aggies, Andrew Monaco. You know, Do you agree? I mean, I think mathematically now the SEC is in chaos, kind of cool chaos in our business, but the winner has got the inside, has got the inside rail in chasing an SEC championship game.
Yeah, I think so. Jeff, we've been so used to East and West, right?
Yeah, yeah.
In the
yeah.
division. So it was like, man, if you can get out of the West, you got a shot at Atlanta.
Right.
Now, everything's completely different. Yeah, it does. It does kind of do that. With a lot of tests, even in November, right? Like, but yeah, you're right about inside track. And I think you learn a little bit more about yourself in a game like this. For both of these schools, does LSU keep trending? Look, Brian Kelly's been doing this and doing this well for a lot of years. So I think he knows what he has. Jeff, I think it also speaks back to week number one, that you're not out of it after a week one loss. When every coach says it's not just coach speak, everything is ahead of us. When they talk about that, they talk about the conference play, and you know you're going to be tested. So, yeah, I think you do have the inside track with a lot of tests still to come, but I think you can gain an awful lot of confidence if you can walk away with a win on Saturday.
Yeah, the buzz around the winner of this game is going to be huge, I think. And I also think that the buzz about these two coaches now, I mean, I would make an argument that, you know, if you're trying to plot the top coach of the year in the SEC, I think two of the coaches that are going to be in the conversation, very much in the conversation, maybe the winner is the favorite. I think they're on the sidelines at Kyle Field.
Yeah, I think so, because I don't think the, as we said, we talked about expectations and you play to those as well. What Mike was going to do his first year in the SEC. I think it's Clark Lee's to lose at Vanderbilt.
Okay,
but he's had some time, right? And I think that speaks to what these coaches have done, Jeff. Brian Kelly now in his third year at LSU. And neither Mike nor Clark right now face what Brian Kelly faces every single year. To coach at LSU is completely different than any place else, if you ask me. 10 wins is not enough there. Yeah. And that's all he's done the last 2 years. Heck, you knew the grief he was getting after the USC loss
right
before there. So, but Mike also knows and embraces where he wants A&M to be is on that level. And how do you do that? As he's instilled this championship mindset, I think the trust that Clark Lee has gotten at Vanderbilt from his group and getting the players that he wants and playing that style is big. It's still brand new for Vanderbilt, right? For Vanderbilt, I think a lot of it, Jeff, is we haven't seen enough. Like the Alabama win wasn't enough. The Kentucky win's not enough. Prove it again, prove it again, because they haven't been on this stage in the past. Now, you do that at your own peril because it's a very good team. Everybody I've talked to said Vanderbilt says, you know, they're legit. But you know how 18 to 22s are. It's just Vanderbilt, right? For Mike Elko, it's like, well, how good is he going to be? Yeah, he did it at Duke, but can he do it at A&M? Can he do it at the SEC? Forgetting that Mike did this at A&M as a defensive coordinator. Now he's got the entire program, but he had that success. One more storyline. Mike Elko went from Bowling Green to Notre Dame and coach with Brian Kelly with the Fighting Irish. So to me, the similarities are there and some of the underlying stories that we have for Saturday at Kyle Field.
What are one, two, or three things that make the difference on Saturday?
Well, I really think the Aggies have to win the turnover battle. They did not against Mississippi State and got away with it.
Yeah.
You can't go on the road and lose the turnover battle. Mike is big on third down conversions, Jeff, offensively and defensively. You got to get off the field when you have an opportunity. Again, I'm going to give you the old easier said than done when you do that against LSU, because even third and long, they've got some magicians on the field that can extend drives. The Aggies were 9-for-14 against Mississippi State. I thought Colin Klein was at times masterful running the ball on what was an obvious third down passing situation. And when you had Le'Veon Moss, that continued. I think that can be so deflating as well to the opposition. And whoever wins the line of scrimmage, I know I sound like a broken record, but boy, to me, guys with their hands in the dirt will decide who wins on Saturday. I think those are three key elements to this game against the Aggies and the Tigers.
Well, Andrew, as always, it's good talking to you, man. Enjoy the game. It's you know, it's fun when these mean so much, right?
You're exactly right. And let's see, the black uniforms are coming out.
Oh, wow.
Out Kyle Field, LSU's in. Yeah, so you add that, I'm going to say it again, going to be electric at Kyle Field.
Is that a black helmet?
We haven't seen those yet. They've teased us with just the jerseys.
Okay.
I have a feeling it's going to be all black, Jeff, coming out. So I can just imagine at 6:40-ish or whatever when they're running out of the tunnel to power. That would be the first of, I'm hoping, many times that Kyle Field starts swaying.
Wow, very cool. Would a black helmet be, that's got to be the first, right?
No, you know what, Kevin Sumlin had these during the Johnny Manziel era. They had done that. Okay. He and Mike Evans and that crew hadn't worn that. But I don't know if it's going to be as metallic as that look was. And I think there's going to be more black and white. There was some maroon in those uniforms when Kevin was wearing at times the ice white and then the black. But yeah, they teased it. And I'll tell you what, Mike's done a really good job. Like, this isn't Oregon where you're going all over the place.
Yeah.
But the players are having a little bit of a say here. And I think that says an awful lot about that give and take and the trust for one another. But yeah, it's been something and one of the talking points leading up. So expect a blacked out Kyle Field. This will be something because the 12th man will certainly be a part of it.
Andrew, as always, thanks. Appreciate it, man.
Thank you, Jeff.
All right, next up, let's talk about who is under pressure. Hello, Connor Wiegman again. Sonny Dykes at TCU. Joey McGuire at Texas Tech. Oh, you lost to Baylor. You, of course, are under pressure. Steve Sarkisian as well. I'll pick some games also. I'm Jeff Ward, and this is Game Day.
Game Day with Jeff Ward on News Radio 1080 KRLD, powered by Uber Eats. Game Day with Jeff Ward, where Texas college football goes under the lights. On News Radio 1080 KRLD.
I'm Jeff Ward, and this is Game Day. We're at that point in the college football season where we're talking about playoff spots. That's because this year is the first year of a 12-team playoff with guaranteed spots going to the winners of the Big Four conferences, ACC, Big Ten, SEC, and the Big 12. And then the highest-rated non-Power Four conference team selected by the committee gets an automatic berth as well. The rest are at-large berths. So we're headed in the direction of controversy for sure. Is this a good setup? Is the old way a better way? Or should the tournament be expanded? Because you know what's going to happen. Somebody's going to say, I've been screwed. Mac Gangle's a columnist with the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. Okay, Mac, we know, I actually think a team in your area might be one of those that gets screwed out of a spot in this tournament, and that would be SEC. But is this a better model? Is it the best model? What's your take on how it's set up and constructed now?
To me, it reads like just 8 more teams than the previous system. I mean, it's an invitational.
Yeah.
It's not a playoff. It's an invitational, and which is fine. I mean, the NCAA basketball tournament, that's a little bit more of a tournament. But it's still, this is an invite-based thing with some guaranteed spots. And the Big Ten and the SEC are going to get the majority of them. And those are that's where the national champion is probably going to come from. But I think it's always going to be messy. It doesn't really matter. I shouldn't say it doesn't really matter. It just, they can make little modifications and changes and do some expansions to it. But I think if you look at historically at college football's top five, it's pretty much the same Walmart, Target, Goldman Sachs teams that have been there since 1970. And this only pretty much ensures that that's going to continue. The idea of some random upset, cute little team like Navy, Army slipping through and winning the national championship is ridiculous. What TCU did 2 years ago was a miracle. And I don't know if we'll see that again. We might, you never know. But to me, this new system is coming. It's going to be fun. It'll be interesting. It'll drive a lot of debate. Certainly the viewership of it will be through the moon. But I think ultimately the winner will be the same winner that it's been for the last 50 years.
But we can anticipate. See, I think the Big 12 is only going to get one team. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that the SEC is going to get 4 almost by mandate. The Big 10 is probably going to get 3 or 4 almost by mandate. And then there's crumbs for everyone else. But, you know, I think the Big 12's, it could be 2 undefeated teams playing for the Big 12 championship, and the loser of that is out, and a 3-loss SEC team would be in. And I'm thinking the ACC, which is turning out to be a pretty interesting league, I'm thinking someone like, even like SMU could be on the out, that they may not, that league may not even get 2 teams in.
I think it depends on the 2 teams. I don't see any scenario where SMU gets in unless they win the league. They're not going to, but let's just say it happened. That's the only way they're going to get in.
Yeah.
If it comes to, this is all about names. And I think what SMU has done this season is really impressive, because You know, they barely lost to a really good BYU team, and everybody else they pretty much hammered.
Yeah.
Like, they're good. And you know, anybody saying, oh, you can't do this, just go back to the early 80s when they were paying guys. They can do it. Like, they've got a lot of talented kids. That tight end they've got is really good. The quarterback is really good.
Right.
But to me, when I see that league, if you start coming down to at-large bids and this and that, it's going to be Clemson or Miami. You know, Pitt is really good. People are sleeping on Pitt. Pitt's really good. And they've got a big game tonight. They've got a big game against Syracuse. But Clemson's going to be the team. Or Miami. Miami has got a really good quarterback. Cam Ward's really good. So I think those are the teams that are going to get the preferential treatment. And you're right. You know, just looking at the top of the Big 12, let's just say for the sake of argument, Colorado keeps winning and they're one or two. Colorado would get an at-large bid. I guarantee it. I guarantee Colorado would get an at-large bid. Kansas State, good team, really good team. Iowa State's had a heck of a good year, and I really believe in Matt Campbell, and certainly BYU. BYU, to me, is Notre Dame light. The rest of them, I think you're right. They're fighting over table scraps, and that's just the way it is. It's not bad, but we are living in, I think I called it the big SEC 10, and they're going to run it, and that's the way it's going to be.
How far away or do you think it's real that no matter what happens with this 12-team tournament at this year, next year, or however it is, do you think this entire sport is headed to the ultimate super conference where this 12-team tournament we have right now, where you throw stuff at, non-Power 4 conferences and the Big 12 and the ACC, do you think that super conference is coming and that's going to be the ultimate tournament? And how far away is that?
I don't think it's coming. Let me say that. It's already here. It is. It's already here. Like, I mean, just look at the Big Ten and the SEC. It's basically here. And then you've got, a handful of other teams that can kind of compete. It's here. There'll never be relegation. America will never adopt that system.
Right.
In any shape or form. So throw that out. But the whole idea of the Super League is basically here. Go look at your college football Saturdays now and be... consolidation of these leagues has guaranteed for more interesting matchups and for stadiums that are built from a bygone era that have a better chance to fill up. That's what's driving this.
Yeah.
And the idea of expanding the playoffs, well, you have challenges, the academic calendar years, guys getting ready for who want to get ready for the NFL. I don't know if it can get much bigger. But eventually they run out of revenue and you're like, okay, how can we make more money? Okay, well, I've got more playoff teams. And that's what the NCAA tournament's going to do with its basketball tournaments probably the next year or so, is expand that to basically another full round. So I think, all this stuff is, and I do think there is a legitimate drive on the part of administrators at both the SEC and the Big Ten to make sure that they include ACC and Big 12 teams, that they cannot just completely shut them out. They can't.
Why?
Because those schools matter, and you want to sell hope. You want to sell the idea, because that's the way you broaden it. Financially, they're not that big of a drag. They're a little bit, but you can take the hit for the betterment of the sport and the game. Because I do think when the Pac-12 just completely cratered and everybody got picked off, everybody looked inward and said, what are we doing here? We just murdered a conference. It really dramatically affected the quality of the livelihoods for a lot of people that they know. And that wasn't funny. That wasn't funny. It wasn't fun. Now, I know the Pac-12 is coming back to life, but it's not the same league. There was a definite pause there. Like, oh, okay, wait, what are we doing here? The system that has been sort of created, some light version of that is going to continue on for a good while.
Curious, because I think SMU is really that. I mean, I think they're really good as well. I wouldn't want any part of them. If they were in the SEC, would they finish in the top five?
I doubt it. They're good. They're really good, and I don't think anybody should sleep on them.
Yeah.
The reason the SEC is just, well, one, perception. I mean, they've got a marketing machine at their benefit, which gives you the idea that somehow the Kentucky Wildcats in the SEC would win every other league in football, including the NFL. So they have that going for them. But the bigger difference is when you look at those SEC teams, they load up on defensive front seven players. They get front seven defensive players that in a greater quantity that are just better players. And that's usually where the difference is in college football. You can have a great receiver at this place or that place. You can have great quarterback here and there, running back or a center or guard or something, or defensive back. But typically when you look at the SEC teams and why they do just a little bit better, they have athletes on the front seven defensively that in a greater quantity that other places just can't get. And that's why when you say, how would SMU do there? I'd still probably put my money on them to be a winning team, but they ain't beating Tennessee, and they sure as hell aren't beating Georgia.
Yeah. If you had to bet your house on it, the final this year is a Big Ten v. SEC?
I haven't looked at the brackets yet. I think that's kind of a safe bet. I mean, if you're going to throw down $50, you bet your house or $50 or whatever else, and you're looking to play percentages. I mean, just look at the top 25.
Right.
Look at the top 20. It's all SEC and ACC. I mean, right now in the SEC, you have 9 teams from the SEC that are in the top 25. You can call it bias, you can call it silly, whatever you want, but the reality is 9 of them are in the top 25. That's absurd. And now when you go up to the Big Ten, you've got 5 out of the Big Ten. 14 of the top 25 are out of 2 conferences. 14. And the number one team in the country is Oregon. So, yes, I mean, I think if you're playing a lot of averages and just say, okay, here's your house, you're going to bet on the Big Ten or SEC, and I want to live in my house the next day, I'm betting on one of those two teams to win the national championship, one of those two conferences.
Very cool. Good points. Mac, thanks as always, man.
It's a pleasure. It's good talking to you. Thanks for having me.
Yep. Mac Angle from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. All right, next up, let's talk about, there's plenty of pressure to go around. There's a huge game at Kyle Field. So let's talk about who is under pressure. Then I will pick some games as well. It's Game Day. I'm Jeff Ward.
Game Day with Jeff Ward on News Radio 1080 KRLD, powered by Uber Eats. This is Game Day with Jeff Ward, powered by Uber Eats on News Radio 1080 KRLD.
I'm Jeff Ward, and this is Game Day. So what coaches, players, or teams are under the most pressure this weekend?
Now, Under Pressure, powered by Sampac 5-Star Ford, North Richland Hills.
First up in all caps, quarterbacks. Connor Wiegman of Texas A&M and that's right, I said and, Garrett Nussmeier of LSU. They play at Kyle Field on Saturday night, and both are playing their best football so far this season. The game, honestly, might come down to who has the ball last. There's no way to separate one over another in terms of quarterback pressure. Their offenses go for both LSU and A&M. Their offenses go exactly as their quarterbacks go. The guy that plays badly, that team loses. Under pressure, TCU coach Sonny Dykes. When I say under pressure, that doesn't mean he's going to get fired. I feel like I qualify that every single week. But it's been a disappointing season. And it's weird. A loss to Texas Tech this weekend would pour gas on the criticism and the pressure on Sonny Dykes. They have 2 losses. They're out of the Big 12 race. But, and here's where they could get some momentum and get rid of this pressure. They're coming off a good win at Utah, and a win at home against Texas Tech would be a momentum builder. So there's the upside. The loss, a loss at home would be the downside, of course. That would mean 3 terrible, and I mean terrible losses at home. SMU scored 66 on them in Fort Worth. And then they lost to Houston, which has to sting. That's one of the worst teams in the Big 12. Under pressure, same time, same game. That would be Joey McGuire, head coach, Texas Tech. I said on Friday before their game against Baylor, you can't lose at home against Baylor. You can't. They did. In fact, they were blown out and gave up 59 points after winning 4 games in a row, and it was all kumbaya for Texas Tech. But now, now the pressure is really on him. Another couple of losses, another couple, and it could start with the TCU loss, another couple of losses, and he's on a watch list. People in Lubbock say he's likely not going to get fired, but I think the pressure is ramping up on Joey McGuire. If Tech were to go on the road to lose to a subpar TCU team, then the heat is going to be turned up on Joey McGuire. Under pressure, SMU, in a good way. But you're going to say, wait, Jeff, they're playing excellent football. I know. They're playing really, really good. And there's a lot to like about this SMU team. The reason why they're under pressure is they can't lose a game the rest of the way. They are a team that is very much considered a bubble team in the 12-team tournament. They're a team that quietly is chasing an ACC championship game. And so the pressure is you can't slip at all. The margin of error for TCU, for SMU, is absolutely zero. If they want to play for the ACC championship game in their very first year in the league and they want a playoff spot, they have to win out. They play Duke this weekend, and Duke's not terrible. But from here on out, SMU's probably going to make this list because they have to win every single week. And to impress the selection committee, they've got to blow some people out. Under pressure, again, didn't see this one coming. Quinn Ewers. Here's why. Texas plays Vanderbilt. It should be easy. They're a 19-point favorite. But that's not the storyline here. The storyline of this game is going to be, can Quinn Ewers play well start to finish? He was out for almost a month, didn't play all that well against Oklahoma, and then, in a dramatic move, his head coach pulled him against Georgia and put in Arch Manning. So he's gone out of his way to say that Quinn Ewers is his guy. He's gone out of his way to say Quinn Ewers is his starter, and I think most people can believe that to be true. But the question now is, how short would the leash be on Quinn Ewers if he doesn't play well? His coach has already set the precedent. If you're struggling, if you're not feeling it, I'll go to the bullpen. And the bullpen in this case is arguably the most popular player in college football. That's Arch Manning. So Quinn Ewers has got to play well, really well, start to finish.
Now, by the numbers, powered by Classic Chevrolet.
All right, last thing. Let's pick a few games. These games are against the point spread. So let's be polite and say no wagering, unless it's among family members, of course. I think I was 4-1 last week. Surprisingly, went against the grain and picked Georgia against Texas. So let's pick some games. All right, here we go. Texas Tech is favored by 6.5 in Fort Worth over TCU. If you think you know what this game is about, I don't. This is confusing. I'm going to take TCU, oddly enough, to cover. I feel like the momentum could be changing for TCU. So TCU, I think they covered that 6.5 at home. I have no idea how it is that Texas Tech is favored by 6.5. So TCU there. Next up is Texas, favored by 19 against Vanderbilt. Be careful here. Wasn't that long ago that Alabama was a 22-point favorite in Nashville, and Vanderbilt not only covered, but they beat them, and the goalposts ended up in a river. So Vanderbilt is good. Don't laugh. Texas is tired. I know they're desperate, but they're tired. They got kicked in the face by Georgia. I'm actually going to – I don't think Vanderbilt wins. If they do, then just erect a statue of their head coach and just move on. But I'm going to take Vanderbilt to cover this giant spread of 19 points at home. There you go. SMU, favored by 12 at Duke. It's a Duke team that started the year 5-0. They're not bad at all. Really not. The ACC is turning out to be an interesting and pretty good league this year, top to bottom. You know, I'm going to take SMU to win. They have been on fire, and if they cover this 12, it's just that they keep doing this week in and week out where they just blow people out. So I'm going to guess sooner or later they have somewhat of an off day on offense, and this might be it because Duke's not bad. So I'm actually going to take – I think that SMU wins, but I'm going to take Duke, the ultimate basketball school, to keep it within 12 in this game. If SMU covers that one, then just pick them the rest of the year because they're on fire. Then we got the biggest game of the weekend, the most impactful game of the weekend. I mean, this is inside rail for an SEC championship, and it is super cool, everything to like about it. Get this. Texas A&M is a 2.5-point favorite over LSU, and they are at Kyle Field, and we're told that it's going to be a blackout. In other words, they're going to wear all black. And Mike Elko, the winner, the coach that wins this game, I believe has also got the inside track on being the SEC coach of the year. Mike Elko said this about his team.
You know, when you look back at it, I think, you know, we kind of talked this way after the game, and I think it played out this way. You know, sometimes you don't have your best stuff, and you got to find a way to win, and we did. You know, we lost the turnover battle, which is not a good recipe on the road. We didn't win the fourth quarter, which is not a good recipe for success. You know, we had a bad two-minute drive at the end of the half on defense. We had a bad four-minute drive at the end of the game on offense, and still found a way. And I think that's a testament to the grit and the toughness of the group, that in that environment, environment, you could not be playing your best football and still find a way to win.
That's well said. Say this for Mike Elko, man. He shows up at these news conferences and he's not blowing smoke. What he's talking about, and pretty tough on his team, I think, he's talking about them not playing all that well on the road against Mississippi State. But he's also right about this. There is something about this A&M team. There's some resilience there. There really is. And they're so good on defense and they play so hard. He's exactly right. I mean, this is a really cool setup with LSU. The question of the day, of course, is going to be, is Kyle Field worth 3 points? Is it? Is it worth more than 3 points? Would Kyle Field be the most valuable home field advantage in college football? Because I think you can make a pretty compelling argument that Kyle Field is really worth the 3 points. So I'm going to say, yes, it is worth 3 points. This would be the biggest Aggie win. We can start playing around with that. It would be the biggest Aggie win. Of course, they blew out Missouri at home. And at the time, Missouri was ranked number 9. That was a stepping stone. That was a big win. But this would be the biggest Aggie win, period, and probably the biggest Aggie win at home since the days of Johnny Manziel pulling off an upset against Alabama. I think most people would agree with that. So, okay, now, Jeff, wait, it's 2.5 points. You said Kyle Field is worth 3, and you believe it, so you must be taking the Aggies here in the blackout game. I am. Yeah, I am. LSU is tough. LSU is tested. They're not going to flinch. Brian Kelly knows that, but there's something about this A&M team. I think they create enough breaks. I think they actually cover this at home with a huge, huge win. So there you go. That's it for game day. I'm Jeff Ward. We'll do it again next week.
Game day with Jeff Ward on News Radio 1080 KRLD, powered by Uber Eats.